So welcome to the INSS podcast, and we are broadcasting from the 12th annual conference at INSS in Tel Aviv. With us today is Elizabeth Bodine-Baron, an information scientist specializing in complex networks and systems at the RAND Corporation. She's an associate director of the Force Modernization and Employment Program in Project Air Force, and co-directs the RAND Center for Applied Network Analysis and System Science. Thank you.
Thank you for having
me. For being with us. So we are speaking on the heels of your panel, which dealt with fake news, so to speak, or disinformation in the current age. And you are specifically researching Russia's influence in the social media. You showed a very interesting slide where we saw a kind of a distribution, and on the one side we saw Ukraine and on the other side we saw Russia. My question to you is, firstly, how do you measure influence on social media? And second, okay, so you know that the one side is Ukraine and such users are from Russia, but how do you know it's not regular citizens, and how do you detect the IPs or however else you may know that it's actual, that it's the government or government agencies?
So I'll take the second question first, because it will actually help me answer the first question. Really, what we're doing is not so much the forensic side. We're not tracing back to IPs or linking it to someone sitting in a computer doing something in particular. What we're doing is we're looking at the conversation on social media in Russian. So what are people saying? How are they saying it? How are they talking to each other, whether they're mentioning or retweeting in the specific example of Twitter? How does the structure of that conversation, what does it look like? And what is it that they're saying? So it's not so much that we're connecting it to a known Russian influence operation, that's kind of more intelligence community and law enforcement side. As researchers, we're more interested in what are the themes that are being talked about? What are the key issues that are being talked about, and who's talking about them? So the way that we distinguished between the Ukrainian and the Russian side was essentially by what they were saying. What we call the pro-Russian activist side was definitely they were both consuming and disseminating Russian essentially propaganda. It was extremely pro-Russian, extremely anti-Ukrainian, anti-West. Mixed in with it was a lot of disinformation, so provably false information. And then some of them appeared to be representing themselves as Ukrainian citizens, but pushing this very pro-Russian point of view. So exactly that question, how do you know that it's not just a Ukrainian citizen who has that point of view?
Exactly.
So part of it is you can tell in some ways based on language, word choice, patterns. You can also look at, if you're interested more on the forensic side, which again is not necessarily my specialty, but what time of day they're posting. If it's, you know, they're posting an 8 to 5 day Moscow time, then that's kind of one of the tells that you can use. Now, as actors get more and more sophisticated, and as they realize that this is one of the things that could give them up as pretending to be someone that they're not, they're going to stop doing that. And so it's kind of an arms race between the people who are trying to discover these fake accounts and the people who are actually operating them. To your first question, how do we assess the impact?
So hang on one sec.
Yeah.
So again, regarding this theme, you still don't know if it's bots or trolls or just regular people. It could be just regular people.
So distinguishing between bots and people is relatively simple. There's artificial behavior is relatively easy. Uh-huh. Distinguishing between a person who is, for example, a United States citizen or an Israeli citizen and a Russian troll, potentially much more difficult. And that's an area of open research.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. And yes, and to the first
question. Yeah, so to the first question with assessing the impact, what we're interested in is, are people adopting the same language patterns as what's in that propaganda source? So previously we looked at it in the context of ISIS and Muslim Brotherhood propaganda in Egypt in different regions, and to what extent were people adopting that worldview, that
Arabic?
Way? In Arabic, yes.
So you're talking about messages disseminated in Russian?
Correct.
And you want to see if that penetrates Arabic messages in different corners of the world?
I was unclear. That was a separate research study that we were looking at in Arabic for the ISIS and Muslim Brotherhood propaganda. In Russian, we were looking for Russian propaganda in Russian language Twitter accounts. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it's unconscious word choice. So for example, someone saying 12 versus a dozen. Many times you're not realizing the word choices that you're making, but taken together as an overall pattern, and we actually map out mathematically this statistical pattern of words and phrases, you can realize that someone is essentially repeating the same ideas, and not only that, in the same exact manner as a known propaganda source. And so that's how we assess the impact of the propaganda in different regions over time through what we call resonance analysis.
And do you think there are a lot of innocent citizens replicating those messages, or it's essentially more government agents?
So that's an interesting question, is to what extent is your native population adopting that versus to what extent is it artificial amplification by, for example, bots or trolls or things like that. I don't necessarily have a good answer for you. There's a lot of work right now in kind of that forensic side. How do you distinguish between these? And really, you have to pull together the different pieces, not just what people are saying, but can you connect it with kind of the more cyber side, understanding where they're coming from, and like you said, tying it to IP addresses and all of that. It's a really big challenge, and it's an ongoing area.
So just to understand, do you research this with a team of experts who each of you specialize in a different field, and then you all put your heads together, or is this a very independent research just in this field?
I could not do this on my own. So my background is electrical engineering. Essentially, I do network analysis. I try to understand the structure of networks and how people are connected and what information is flowing across those networks. But I work really closely with a clinical psychologist whose background is in counterterrorism and information operations. On our team, we'll have, for example, a Russian linguist and a Russian propaganda subject matter expert.
So very multidisciplinary.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right. Okay, so moving on to and bring you here to this region. As you know, we're in a very sensitive period now. This is elections, general elections coming up here in Israel in April. And we should expect that there's also, or should be, or maybe will be, foreign influence on the discourse. Can you detect traces of it? And how can we protect ourselves from this?
So I think in this area, when it comes to influence on elections, the cat is out of the bag. Everyone knows that this can be done, and for relatively little resources. And it's not just foreign influence, it's also domestic influence. These are the tools of the new age that we live in, is how do you take that information environment and use it to your own ends, whether it's looking at the difference between the Democratic and Republican Party in the United States, or the various parties you have here in Israel, or potentially foreign actors trying to shape people's opinions in an area. And so I don't think, assuming that it's not going to happen, not a good idea. That's too many negatives. But yes, it's probably going on. What can you actually do about it?
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things that came up in the United States, and I think has also come out here, is this idea that you're going to require social media companies to disclose the people who are paying for political advertisements on their platforms. So in the United States, it was called the Honest Ads Act. Here, I think that there was similar legislation that was proposed. And in the end, it didn't end up coming or being put through, but the social media companies, at least in the United States for the 2018 midterm elections, did it anyway. Question is, how good did that really have an impact or not? It certainly doesn't hurt, but to pretend that that's something that's going to solve everything is really naive. You need to not only disclose and educate your consumer so that they know this is coming from a particular source, but also you need to be able to deter your adversaries who might be doing that. You need to be able to identify this is where propaganda could potentially be coming from, and it's Russian or Chinese or Iranian or whatever it might be. There's a whole process, and you have to look at it from multiple different ways. A single solution like that piece of legislation is good, but it's not going to solve everything.
So we're out of time, but perhaps one closing sentence, and I'll say this and just tell me if you agree. Perhaps an important aspect is educating the public as well, because I think that in previous elections, like in the elections now in the US, I think we were less aware. But now, with the Trump investigations and so forth, we're very much aware of the potential of foreign influence, and therefore, when we consume media, we do so much more warily. Could that be, do you agree with that?
I think so. There might potentially be a downside to that as well, though, because now if we live in an age where you just doubt everything, then in some ways, Russia has achieved its goal in terms of sowing confusion and eroding trust in the democratic process. Exactly. So it's a fine balance.
So there's much more to speak about and much more to learn in this field. Thank you so much for joining us. And please join us for additional conversations on the INSS podcast and on the INSS website. Thank you.